You're listening to The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast.
A new study of men on PrEP has reached some surprising conclusions, finding that the rate of STI infection was lower than expected and that condom use did not reduce the spread of STIs. Michael Tragar, a PhD candidate at the Burnet Institute, was involved with the research and spoke to Toby Halligan and Ian Muchamore about their findings.
We did observe an increase in bacterial STIs once the men started taking PrEP, but most of the increase was explained by an increase in testing frequency. Mm-hmm. So once you start using PrEP, obviously you get tested every 3 months, which for a lot of these men was a lot more frequently than they were getting tested. So obviously the more you test, the more you're going to find. Probably the other most interesting thing that we found is when we looked at all the behavioural characteristics associated with STIs, we found that condom use was not really a significant predictor of how likely you were to be diagnosed with an STI. So after adjusting for all the other factors, the most important things were really partner number and age. So this is really kind of a rebuttal to the backlash about PrEP users reducing their condom use when really condom use didn't really have an influence on how likely you were to get an STI.
And my understanding is that, because I think to a lot of people, that goes very much against the grain of a lot of fundamental lessons that have been drilled down into us, largely because up until this point, condoms have obviously been the main method for preventing the spread of HIV. But my understanding, that's because a lot of what's happening here is that other STIs are being transmitted through oral sex. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, even when you look at condom use over the past decade, there's been a pretty steady decline among gay and bisexual men. So it's probably not that fair to say as that PrEP is the main cause of the reduction in condom use. What we think is it's much more complicated, and there are other complex factors that are leading to an increase in STIs, such as a change in sexual networks, or as you said, different kinds of sex or oral sex, which condoms don't protect STIs from. Mm-hmm.
I guess we wouldn't really expect guys who were on this PrEP study to be using condoms that frequently anyway. They probably, I think, had lower rates than perhaps other populations. So, yes, what's the message?
I think the most important message is really about testing, getting testing frequency up to a rate where we can diagnose and treat STIs as quickly as possible.
So if we're going to test STIs more often, yep. The current practice in Australia, what we're told time and time again, is if we are frequently loving, if we're in having lots of sex, or we have multiple partners, that we should test it at least every 3 months.
That's right. So in Australia, we have pretty clear PrEP guidelines that have been released a few years ago that recommend quarterly testing for all PrEP users. But I would say that our data shows that maybe some PrEP users, a smaller group, might actually benefit from a higher frequency of STI testing.
Now, I went 2 years ago to Dean Street Clinic in the UK, and they were talking about this 2 years ago in the UK, and they were saying that they were offering monthly testing to men who would need it and would benefit from it. Why is it not being implemented in Australia?
Well, actually, when we look at our data, some men actually are getting tested almost monthly. So it hasn't reached the point of guidelines yet, but I think there needs to be a lot more work, and there is room for more research, perhaps modelling studies, to look at what is the optimal testing frequency and what are the behavioural criteria that indicate someone should be getting tested more often.
So we have some evidence already. Our community is used to acting on best practice on when we think we've got sufficient evidence. Don't we have sufficient evidence to be recommending to guys who would benefit from it that they should be testing more than once every 3 months?
Yeah, definitely I would say so. But then it gets to the point of how do you make that easy for guys? You know, how do you make testing every month easily accessible, and how do you reach the right men who are in need of higher frequency testing?
What's your experience, perhaps going a little bit beyond the research study, but do you think that sexual health services are welcoming, are accessible in the way that you're talking about there, or what improvements could we see?
I think they're definitely welcoming, and when we look in the PrEPX study, we asked participants, you know, how they felt about their experiences visiting the clinics, and they said they were very positive experiences, but I think it really just comes down to things like waiting times, trying to get an appointment where the nearest location is. So increasing services in that way, I think, would go a long way.
Are you aware of how this research has been reported by... Let me provide context. I'm sure you're across this, but for our audience, the way the gay press has reported this has focused on condom use and I think some of the more interesting takeaways that we've been talking about in this interview. That's not the way it's been reported by a lot of the mainstream medical press. The way they've reported it is that literally headlines, men on PrEP see increases in STIs. And I know that American-based academics have published not a rebuttal so much as, you know, focusing or honing in on that. And, I mean, my interpretation, and I'm, you know, offering commentary really here, but was almost they were feeding into some of the PrEP shaming that we've seen. What's your response to that kind of coverage?
I just think, again, it's really important to highlight that these men were engaged in high levels of sexual health care. They were getting tested far more frequently than they were before, and more frequently than men who are not on PrEP. So I think it's really important that we need to hone that message that these men do care about their sexual health. They're not being irresponsible. And these are the ones who were volunteered to go on the study in the first place. So they obviously care about their sexual health.
Mm-hmm. And they also care about their partner's sexual health as well. Because I think that one of the big takeaways for me was that inevitably when you are testing regularly, you are going to pick things up more. And we know this from a whole variety of other areas of medical science in terms of when you make the authorities more receptive to, say, the reporting of domestic violence rates go up, or the measured domestic violence rates go up. Because I think there is a really strong threat out there that relates to a certain image that people have of men on PrEP. And it is prejudiced, and it's also quite strong within the gay community as well.
Definitely. I mean, there's some pretty interesting Australian research to show that among HIV-negative men who aren't on PrEP, the level of comfort in having sex with a man who is on PrEP is actually still quite low. I mean, only about 50% of men said that they are comfortable in having sex with another man who is on PrEP. Mm-hmm. And when you even ask men about if they accept PrEP among the entire community just as a prevention technology or as a prevention tool, still it's only about half of the men say that they are really accepting of it. And while that has been increasing over the last few years, I think it still stems down to maybe a lack of exposure about PrEP or an understanding of what PrEP really is.
When we hear that amongst men who were taking PrEP in the PrEPX study that there's an increase in STIs, what seems to get missing, or perhaps it can't be explained simply, but maybe you can give it a go, is how big that increase is. My understanding is it's really quite a small increase.
Definitely. I mean, compared to what some of perhaps the fears were before the PrEPX study started, it really is quite a modest increase. And after we adjusted for the change in testing frequency, it was about a 20% increase from the year beforehand to the year after. But again, one of the most important things was it wasn't across the board. So more than half of participants didn't get an STI at all.
That's really interesting. And it's also worth saying as well, the study, like 4,000, what was the population?
Yeah, so 4,200, just over that in the entire study.
Yeah, right. And so half of them did not get an STI at all. See,
exactly.
I think that's, like, again, that cuts against the stereotype, if you like, of PrEP users.
Exactly. And when we look at the men who were experiencing infections, it was mainly the case that they were getting infected, then they were getting tested and treated, and then becoming susceptible again quicker. So as I said before, the faster you treat, the quicker you become susceptible again. And that's why we were seeing the high rates of reinfection.
Great. So if there was one kind of big takeaway from this study, what would you say is, you know, the takeaway you would hope that people who read it or are reading about it would take away from it?
I think the most important thing is going forward, now that we've moved away from the study and men are accessing PrEP from just their local GPs, that maintaining high levels of testing for asymptomatic STI testing is going to be really, really important.
That was Michael Tragar from the Burnet Institute speaking with Toby Halligan and Ian Muchmore. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to The Informer, a Joy 94.9 podcast.
We ask the CEO of Thorn Harbour Health, Simon Ruth, for his response to the recently conducted PrEP study.
Probably the biggest message we got from it was that condoms played very little role in the rate of STIs that people were experiencing. So we've always, over 35 years, we've had a long-term belief that we knew that condoms protected you from HIV if you're able to use them consistently, and that condoms also protected you against STIs. And I guess the main thing that we've learned from this study is that condoms play very little role in relation to STIs. It had more to do with who you were having sex with, how often you were having sex, and how many people you were having sex with. So the key message about that then is the need to test, so that you need to test more often, preferably four times a year. Some people may want to even go higher than that, but if you're having a lot of sex, you need to be testing regularly. There's also other research that's coming out, and particularly coming out of here in Victoria and out of Melbourne Sexual Health, talking about the effectiveness of using things like mouthwash, so Listerine, so one they're looking at, and the how if you use Listerine after oral sex or where you've had certain things in your mouth, it will decrease your chances of certain STIs. So the belief is that STIs are being spread more orally than they are anally or through otherwise, and because of that, condoms are less likely to be used, and so they're less protective.
That is fascinating, because I was otherwise going to go through the, you know, unpacking process in terms of, you know, those kinds of curious results, but that's the kind of eureka moment. That makes perfect sense in a whole variety of ways. So
you get STIs in your throat, and then you spread them to other places. So they're being spread through putting things in your mouth.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's an important thing for people to be aware of. So do you mind, I appreciate we're not necessarily talking about that study in particular, but in terms of Listerine, what kinds of STIs is it effective for? Is it any kind of Listerine?
No, it was a specific type of Listerine. I think it was the regular one. Mm-hmm. I think it was gonorrhea is what they were studying it for, and yes, it was shown to be effective in cutting rates of gonorrhea. But presumably, you know, as you look broader at other bacterial STIs, it would have similar effects.
Right, and I presume now, and just to be clear, I appreciate, you know, asking someone who's quite eminent within the community to clarify this, but I think it's worth it for people listening in. I presume one's got to use it properly, yeah? So we're talking like a full gargle, or did they investigate?
Yeah, so they're still figuring that out. So, you know, it's a world-first study that's looking at that. I think they looked at people gargling for a minute, and you had to gargle properly. It wasn't just washing it around your mouth, it was gargling it.
Yep.
And again, over time, I guess we'll imagine, you know, a minute might become 30 seconds, and, you know, we will learn a lot more about it. But they used it a lot, but they did find that it cut rates.
That is
of STIs. The funny thing is, though, when I talk to our life members and people who ran in the 80s, they say things like, of course we all knew that back in the 80s. You know, that's why people use Listerine so often. So a lot of this is stuff that community's already aware of, and the science end is just starting to catch up with and starting to research properly.
That's incredible. And so why do you think that is? Is that perhaps because there was a concern at not... I mean, now in a PrEP world, it is possible to begin questioning the assumptions that we had about condom use, because there's an alternative to condoms. Was the concern about investigating other alternatives perhaps because, you know, independently of whether it could impact other STIs, condoms were the only way to really stop HIV spreading?
Yeah, I guess there were probably ethical concerns about running studies where certain groups in the study wouldn't use condoms, you know, prior to PrEP, because, you know, condoms were our most effective way of preventing HIV, and that's what the main game was, preventing HIV. PrEP has allowed us to, you know, broaden out those studies as now otherwise PrEP and undetectable viral load, which is even more successful than PrEP in preventing HIV. You know, and there's probably actually been a lot of judgments about gay men's sex lives, and, you know, and a lot of, you know, when the media report on our sex lives and gay and bisexual men, it's quite judgmental, and, you know, they sort of believe that we get diseases because we deserve them, and that's not the case. You know, we now know that, you know, diseases spread and someone gave it to you and someone gave it to them, and, you know, there's no shame in picking those up, but, you know, it's now about how we prevent them, and there are lots of ways that we can prevent them, and through testing and using Listerine, and condoms are probably still effective to a certain degree as well. There's other ways to prevent them.
That's fascinating. I mean, one of the fascinating things about this particular study that we're talking about is the way that the gay press and the way that, I mean, the heterosexual press, to simplify, have reported it. Because the gay press, the headlines were about condoms and the effectiveness of PrEP, whereas in a number of quite respectable medical journals or sites that summarise medical journals, the focus has been on STI increases on amongst men on PrEP, when in fact, as having spoken to some of the study's authors, they concluded it was actually a pretty small increase, much smaller than they expected. How do we push back against that kind of prejudice?
You know, we need to start putting the facts forward. There was a small increase amongst men who went on PrEP of STIs, but you need to look at that in a world where there was also an increase amongst heterosexual people. During that same period, we have a sexual health infrastructure that is in crisis in Victoria. The government's currently undertaking a review into that. It's difficult to get in for a sexual health test right now. And of course, you're going to see high rates of STIs where people test more often. You know, if you were getting sexually health screened once a year, and you got your one, you know, STI per year, or your one time you're getting it, if you're getting tested four times a year, and you're getting STIs picked up twice, that's a benefit of getting tested four times a year. That's not a negative. That's actually a positive.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Can you unpack for me a little bit more exactly the ways in which our sexual health infrastructure is in crisis?
Oh, well, I think most people would know that, you know, if you're on PrEP, you're getting tested four times a year. There's been no major increase to sexual health infrastructure in Victoria, despite the fact that we now have probably 10,000 men increasing their testing rates from once or twice a year to four times a year. We have Melbourne Sexual Health Centre, which is seeing double the number of patients that it was seeing 5 or 10 years ago, with no extra funding. We still only have three or four clinics specialise in sexual health. The ones our community knows, Northside Centre Clinic and Prayer Market and Pronto and Melbourne Sexual Health, and pretty much all those five centres which do the vast majority of sexual health screening in Victoria are all within 5 or 6 kilometres of each other up and down Punt Road. So if you're anywhere else in Victoria, you know, getting a sexual health screen is a difficult process. We've heard stories about how people have gone in for sexual health screens in rural Victoria and have been shamed and embarrassed in pathology centres when across waiting rooms people have been yelled, "We don't do anal swabs here, you'll have to go to Melbourne for that." So there needs to be a huge reinvestment back in sexual health, and the problem with the fact of this ageing infrastructure, where a state government would like to see Medicare paying for it and seeing GPs pick it up, but GPs have enough work on their plate that they're not seeking to specialise in this. Mm-hmm. So we're seeing rises in STIs right across the board, not just amongst gay and bisexual men. Mm. We're also seeing them in the trans community and also in the heterosexual community. So there's rises across all STIs, and it's not just Victoria. We're seeing it pretty much everywhere else in the country as well.
Mm. And it sounds like we need more money being invested in Melbourne, but in particular more money in regional Victoria. Is there a sign from the review that's presently being conducted that the government is listening to voices like yours who are pushing for that?
Well, we have been arguing, as have others, that, you know, the size of Melbourne sexual health needs to be increased for a number of years now. We put out a budget submission every year, and we had an election guide last year which we produced with the Victorian Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby, where we argued that there needed to be an urgent review on Melbourne sexual health. The government is finally doing that review, so we're happy that they're doing the review, but by comparison, New South Wales has 17 sexual health centres and we have one. You know, ours is probably the size of 5 or 6 of theirs, but it's still, when you compare the total size of their 17 to our one, we're running at 30 or 40% of the rate that they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And obviously the impact of that is that people don't get tested, and as a result, diseases spread more widely.
No, well, people don't get tested. A lot of the diseases are asymptomatic, so chlamydia in a lot of men never shows symptoms. Gonorrhea, once you're through that initial phase, and syphilis, often you'll not see symptoms. And some of the diseases don't have the same impact on men, but for a lot of women, they can put women at risk of infertility and other issues as well. So it's important to get tested for the full suite of STIs and get them treated.
Is your takeaway that more gay men need to be on PrEP?
Anyone at risk of HIV should seriously consider going on to PrEP. It's not. We're fortunate in this country that we've tended to limit that to gay and bisexual men and other men who have sex with men, but there would certainly be women and members of the trans community as well who would quite rightly think that PrEP's an appropriate option for them. Taking PrEP is about being responsible about your sexual health. So, you know, we want to encourage people to take responsibility for their own sexual health, and PrEP is one of the ways that people who don't have HIV can do that. Condoms is another, and condoms are still highly successful, and we would still encourage you to use condoms if you're comfortable using them, and getting onto treatment if you are HIV positive and becoming undetectable is another way to do that. Mm. But there's no shame in picking up STIs, and the sooner you get tested, the sooner we can treat them, and we can hopefully eradicate them at some point into the future.
That was Simon Ruth from Thorn Harbour Health speaking to Toby Halligan.
This has been The Informer. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and review on iTunes. It helps others to find the show.